from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, August 23rd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Love this. Sweet it is. Yep, truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he didn't exist. Yeah. When all you have to do is listen to campaign speeches for proof that he does.
I'm the devil.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, I'm sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1954, the first flight of the Lockheed C-130 multi-role aircraft took place. This was 2 years after the B-52 made its first flight. And these two planes are still in use today. They're in a longevity contest. And something I can't figure out here. Both planes are 70 years old. And they work well. They work hard. And the average car only lasts, what, 5 to 10 years? That's not right. And it was on this day in 1991, the World Wide Web was open to the public, although nobody understood what to do with it or how it worked. Worse, your internet provider charged you by the minute. Oh, that was fun.
Staggers the imagination.
Time and time again, we've seen Democrat politicians get away with just about everything short of murder and still end up keeping their position in politics. Have a little bit of a different case here, though, with Tim Walz, candidate for vice president under Kamala Harris. We have 50 Republican lawmakers, all of them military veterans who've made a concerted effort to expose Walz. And these members of Congress say that Walz is lying about his military rank. They also claim he avoided deployment to Afghanistan to pursue his political career. 50 of these representatives. Now, it's good that these guys are, you know, stepping up and speaking out, because it's a disgrace. It really is. It's called stolen valor. You know, that's like the guy who claims he went to Vietnam when he didn't. Now, in their open letter, the 50 veterans didn't mince words as they expressed their concerns. In short, it says here, I can only read part of the letter to you because, geez, this is a huge letter, but it's a barn burner. So here's an excerpt. In short, our grave concern stems from the fact that the office of the vice president is one heartbeat away from becoming the commander in chief. You've already demonstrated your unwillingness to lead in time of war and a lack of honor through your blatant misrepresentations, exploiting and co-opting the experiences of America's combat veterans for personal gain. As a result, America's veterans and service members are rightfully concerned about what would happen to them should you ascend to the presidency. So this is a letter directly to Tim Walz. When America asks you to lead your troops into war, you turned your back on your troops. You've violated the trust of our brothers and sisters in arms. Their blood, sweat, and sacrifice are the only reason our nation's able to exist. Until you admit you lied to them, there's no way you can be trusted to serve as vice president. Wow. Now, this item came from the New York Post. Again, New York Post is a publication I trust. Walz, 60, served in the Army National Guard for 24 years, but retired from his artillery battalion and abandoned more than 500 men under his command 2 months before it deployed to Iraq in 2005. The early departure bumped him down a rank from command sergeant major to command master sergeant for not having completed a 2-year commitment he had already signed on to, which involved some additional coursework. Former brothers in arms, including the military chaplain of his unit, have called Walls cowardly for leaving to run for Congress in 2006 and accused him of stolen valor for repeatedly referencing his service record as part of his political career. The Kamala Harris campaign claimed earlier this month that the 2-term Minnesota governor misspoke during his first run for statewide office in 2018 about having carried weapons of war in war. Walls had earlier implied during his congressional races that he deployed to a combat zone such as Afghanistan, when in fact he had deployed to Italy briefly as part of Operation Enduring Freedom before leaving the National Guard. He later went on the offensive at a campaign stop in Los Angeles and said he was damn proud of my service to this country, and I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record. And the New York Post goes on to say he should be proud of his service. Representative Michael Waltz, Republican of Florida, one of the letter's co-signatories, told reporters in a Wednesday press conference in Chicago amid the DNC convention, "Why do you have to lie about it? Why do you have to exaggerate? He was a sergeant major for a few months, but he didn't do what you have to sign on the dotted line in terms of the schooling and the time and service to retire at that rank. I retired as a colonel. I'm proud of that. I'm not pretending. I retired as a general." Oh, I see. I'm proud of that. I'm not pretending I retired as a general. Okay, pardon me. You know, they don't always use the proper punctuation in the New York Post, or anywhere else for that matter. But anyhow, this guy Michael Waltz, that's Walls with a T in it, okay? Should not be confused with Tim Walls. So, I'm glad he stepped forward, but these 50 representatives, all of them military veterans, signing this letter and sending it directly to Tim Walls, I don't know if that's going to affect him in any way or not. Tim, as you know, he's a Democrat. Democrats get away with anything and everything short of murder. And I don't know, maybe they can get away with murder. I mean, we do, after all, have the Clintons, and how many names are associated? Names of dead people associated with Hillary Clinton? Yeah. So, J.D. Vance told reporters at a campaign event in Michigan, a week or so ago, he said, "Walls has not spent a day in a combat zone. Do not pretend to be something you're not. I'd be ashamed if I was him and I lied about my military service like he did." So, yeah, this is big stuff. And, of course, there are memes, there are posts, there are videos all over Twitter or X in regards to this. And this is an issue that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. And it shouldn't. Here's a real heads up for you. The U.S. economy created 818,000 or 30% fewer jobs than the BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, reported from April 2023 to March of 24, representing the largest downward revision to payrolls since the global financial crisis. This is big, my friend. Yeah, it's not a sexy story, but it's important. It affects you. The updated numbers were part of the Department of Labor's annual benchmark revisions to payroll data. And the BLS adjusts employment data annually to make the payroll figures more accurate, although it's less timely. Now, officials incorporate state unemployment insurance tax records and cover close to all U.S. jobs. So when it comes to homing in on numbers, how accurate are they? Well, it depends on the information they get. And it takes a while to compile it. And according to the Federal Statistics Agency, the downward adjustments were observed in 8 of the 11 industries led by professional and business services. 358,000 fewer. Leisure and hospitality, 150,000 fewer. Manufacturing, 115,000 fewer. And trade, transportation, and utilities, 104,000 fewer. So the three sectors to experience upward changes were private education and health services, 87,000 more, other services, 21,000 more, and government, 1,000 more. And in the 12 months through March, the U.S. labor market reportedly created 2.9 million new jobs, representing a monthly average of 242,000. Following the revisions, the average monthly employment gains were 174,000. Big difference. Now, in 2023, the preliminary benchmark payrolls revision, released in June, showed 306,000 fewer jobs, 358,000 if only private sector positions are factored in. In 2022, there were 462,000 more jobs than previously reported. Now, the Labor Department's addressed the noticeable job revisions, explaining in a report that businesses might have experienced changes that were not initially confirmed to statisticians. Well, okay. The Federal Statistics Agency said, quote, differences between the initial and revised estimates generally indicate that the employment change that occurred at the businesses that had not initially reported was different than the change that occurred at the businesses that had initially reported. I know it's easy to get lost in this, and sometimes it sounds like double talk, but it's not. Various other government statistics have indicated that employment gains reported in recent years have been exaggerated. Well, I had suspected this ever since that first day that Joe Biden sat down behind the Resolute desk. I knew we were being lied to. We were being lied to during the whole 8 years that Barack Obama was in office. I mean, this administration we're living under right now, such as it is nothing more than Barack Obama 2.0. God only knows what we're going to end up with should Kamala Harris win. But I just don't see that happening. So anyhow, the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia found, using the quarterly census of employment and wages, that's the QCEW data, quarterly census of employment and wages, using that data, the BLS had overstated job creation by as much as 1.1 million from March of 2022 to June of 2022. Instead, in the aggregate, the Philly Fed highlighted that 10,500 net new jobs had been added in this span. So the regional central bank stated in December of 2022, payroll jobs in the nation remained essentially flat from March 2022 through June 22 after adjusting for QCEW data. So along comes Nancy Tengler. She's the CEO and chief investment officer of Laffer Tengler Investments. And she said that the monthly employment numbers have been unreliable and subject to dramatic revision. So as a result, she pays more attention to long-term economic trends and data. It's probably the only choice she's got. She said in a note, in the short term, economic numbers drive stock volatility. We remain skeptical of the weekly and monthly reports and instead are focused on the long term. Productivity is rising, as it did in the 1990s, and unit labor costs are declining. This is what drives non-inflationary growth, which is why we believe the economy will ultimately be okay. God, I hope so. Labor productivity rose by 2.3% in the second quarter, up 0.4% in the first 3 months of 2024. So following a significant 3.8% spike in the first quarter, unit labor costs slowed to a lower than expected 0.9% in the April to June period. The U.S. government could be on track for another set of downward revisions in the coming year. And you're going to want to watch for that. They're always reluctant in this administration to provide those figures. Eventually they do because they know they have to, but they're going to do what they can to stonewall. In the first 6 months of 2024, the jobs data were revised by nearly 300,000. Now, the January 2025 employment situation report will include the final benchmark revision. There's so much more that I could pass along to you on this subject, but you know what? It would just bore you to tears. And hopefully I haven't already done that. I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but it was only a couple of years ago when I became aware of what a big industry human trafficking is. Inside our own country. Now we get word that about 148 people were arrested in an operation targeting human traffickers, according to the sheriff of Hillsborough County, Florida. He made the announcement the other day. The operation resulted in two 17-year-old girls and five adult women being freed. Now, they're recovering with the help of organizations formed to help trafficking victims. There are a few NGOs that are non-government organizations out there that are helping out in this regard. Now, the sheriff's office has human trafficking specialists. But for the operation, which started on April 29th and lasted 102 days, the department increased the manpower dedicated to targeting human traffickers. So, Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister. I hope that I'm pronouncing it right. Cronister. I'm not sure if I'm getting the accent on the right syllable. Is it Cronister? I guess it's Cronister. Okay. Chad Cronister. Anyhow, here's what he said. I'm going to quote him. As we approach the summer months, we wanted to do even more. We know children are out of school and they have more free time. They're going to be spending more time on the internet. We wanted to make sure we were being extremely proactive to make sure that no one fell victim to human trafficking for those who wanted to prey on them. Well, the operation involved scouring the regular internet and the dark web, in addition to on-the-ground patrols at hotels, massage parlors, and other locations where trafficking has been known to occur. Now, Cronister said that the large number of arrests is concerning. He highlighted a 33-year-old man who allegedly traveled from Alabama and engaged with someone who he thought was a 15-year-old girl, but was actually an undercover detective. And that man allegedly planned to have women perform sex acts for money and keep most of the money for himself. Another man allegedly trafficked a 17-year-old girl who was living at home with her mother, who didn't know about the abuse, according to authorities. And he's alleged to have posted explicit images of the girl online and arranged for her to go on dates and collected money from the encounters. That man is going to face federal charges, including sex trafficking of a child, and could be sentenced to life in prison. So, State Attorney Susan Lopez said human trafficking not only robs people of their freedom, it also robs people of their dignity. This crime is on the rise across the nation, and our local law enforcement community is doing our part to take a stand to protect victims. Now, many trafficking cases are difficult to prosecute without victims being willing to provide information, and very often that's the case. And she said, I'm in awe of the brave victims who tell their story to help prosecute traffickers so we in the criminal justice system can hold them accountable. I want victims of human trafficking to know we stand with you. The state attorney's office here in Hillsborough County will vigorously prosecute anyone responsible for these horrific crimes. Now, this is what creeps you out then as you dig into this stuff. And if you do dig into it, you're going to be surprised on an almost daily basis. Among those arrested was a firefighter. So Cronister says no one's above the law and you'll be held accountable and prosecuted here in Hillsborough County. God, I hope so. I mean, being a father of five grown kids, a grandfather to three, and great-grandfather to three, I get kind of concerned. Kind of concerned? I get very concerned. You know, parents have to be very vigilant about this industry, human trafficking, and there's an awful lot of trafficking in children. You read the newspapers, you watch the news, you see all these missing children's reports. You can go to a post office and you see the photos of kids missing. I'm trying to remember, was that Walmart? I think it was a Walmart store back when I lived in Sugar Land, used to post a photo board of missing kids, kids from the general area around Sugar Land, Texas. And it's frightening. I mean, you look at the photos and these kids look normal as apple pie, you know, right out of Wally and the Beaver. But, and they are. These are normal kids, but they get tricked. They get lured into this trafficking industry, and in far too many cases, they never come back. Austin Alonzo, writing in the Epic Times, says that for most Americans, affording a car is far more difficult now than it was before the COVID pandemic, and it's not getting much easier. Now, the U.S. automotive market is returning to normalcy after years of supply chain issues, depressed demand for new cars, and low vehicle inventories. However, a new or used car is often too expensive for Americans who are already fighting inflation that's making financial decisions more difficult than they were a few years ago. And Carl Brower, who's an executive analyst at car research engine and price aggregation service iccars.com, said cars aren't nearly as affordable today as they were 5 years ago. Oh, I know that's right. We're looking 5 years ago. A consumer with a budget of $20,000 could actually afford about 50% of the used cars on a lot, on any given lot in the United States. And this is according to Brower. In 2013, only 13% of used cars fell within that price range. That is stunning. That's a stunning statistic. And things are harder for new car buyers, especially when high interest rates are added to already elevated car prices. I mean, I have the money at my disposal without going into debt. I have the money to buy a new car. And new car prices have gone up a lot. The last time I bought a new car, I was able to get a new car, a nice one, for around $26,000. And the car that I bought, which is a car that I'm still driving, a 2011 Dodge Charger, nice car. Not the top of the line model, but a nice one. I got it for $2,000 off because it was a demo. It had 90 miles on it when I bought it. So I took the $2,000 savings and I put that into a warranty, the Chrysler MaxCare warranty, that will fix my car for me with a $100 deductible for as long as I own it. So the car is sitting out in the garage right now with over 250,000 miles on it. And I've been driving since 1964. It's the best car I've ever owned. And I've had Hondas, I've had Toyotas, I've had Fords, Chryslers. I've had lots of GM products. This is the best car I've ever owned. You can't have it. And even if I do buy a new car, which I doubt that I will, because I hate spending money, nothing moves faster than I do stamping out a burning dollar bill. And the car is nicely appointed. Everything works beautifully. And so I have no desire to get a new car. And besides, all new cars now they're all SUVs. I don't need an SUV. I don't want one. But there's this great feeling in owning the car that you're driving, owning it lock, stock, and barrel, free and clear. But right now, that's a dream for just about all Americans. Unless you are a person of means, it's just a dream. Now, the average American's credit score is about 700, according to Experian PLC and Equifax Inc. And that qualifies a buyer for a loan with about a 7% interest rate. That's high. Gee, the last time I bought a car, I got it at a 0% interest rate. I used Chrysler's money to buy my Chrysler product. Now, in June, according to Cars Commerce, the average list price of a new car was $49,500. So roughly double what I was expected to pay back in 2011. That's devastating. The most desired new car, the Ford F-150, averages about $58,000. Now, this guy Brower said interest rates are making $700 to $1,000 monthly payments not only common, but almost unavoidable for a lot of new car buyers. That's completely nuts. And Mr. Brower, you get no argument from me. Now, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics monitors the cost of living in the United States through the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, which includes food, clothing, shelter, fuel, transportation, service fees, and sales taxes. And according to CPI data maintained by the Federal Reserve, the cost of living in the United States ballooned by 22% between 2019 and 2024. That's a lot. The median household income in the United States was about $74,500 in 2022, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis data show that the median income was $78,250 in 2019. You know, and this all started, it started with COVID and then was made even worse by inviting Joe Biden to be your president. So we'll make a quick comparison here. The median household income rose over a longer period from 1984 to 2022 by 31%. The cost of living, as measured by the CPI, tripled during the same period. The BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, sets 1982 to 1984 as its baseline years for the CPI. So, in line with inflationary trends, the average price of a new car rose by about 41% between January of 2021 and May 2024, according to data published by Cars Commerce in July. So here I have that that beautiful white Dodge Charger, and it looks as good today as it did the day I picked it up at the dealership. That car sitting out there in the garage with 251,000 miles on it, and I'm going to continue to drive that thing. I don't know if I'll break down one day and buy something, but when I look at the prices and I look at the designs of today's cars, I'm sorry, I'm just not interested. To the Comedy Corner and Gina Brillen.
So excited to be here for you guys tonight. This is very exciting. I'm in a good place in my life. I just married my first husband. I know, it's so exciting. We'll see how this goes. People always want to know what married life is like. They always ask you that. What's that like? What's married life like? And the best way for me to describe it is it's like finding a parking spot. Well, it's like finding a better parking spot. Because you know how when you're first driving around and you find a spot and it's not really where you want it to be and you know it's going to be a bad idea and probably kind of toxic, but what are you going to do? Not park? Of course not. So you pull in knowing this isn't a good choice, but you stay there for like 6 or 7 years. And then eventually you wise up and you're like, I'm not happy in this spot. I'm just going to leave and go home. And then you pull out thinking you're going to go home, but then you see the perfect spot that's right there. And it's been there the whole time, but you didn't notice because you were distracted by the first spot because the first spot had a nice butt. That's what it's like. And it's wonderful because my husband is a good guy. This is a good relationship, which is good because they're not all winners. I was in a bad relationship for 7 years. People always say the same thing. They're like, if it was so bad, why did you stay? Well, why does anybody stay in a bad relationship? Because they're fun. You never know what's going to happen with this psycho. You're like, what are we going to fight about today? Every day is an adventure. It's like living in one of those choose your own adventure books. But you have no control over the outcome. So you're just there like, did I overcook the chicken? We're gonna find out in a couple of pages. I did, it's on the floor. I was with my ex-boyfriend for 7 years. 3 months after we split, he got married. Now, if you do the relationship math, something shady may have occurred. And I'll give you the hashtag facts, as the kids say. Women get in more bad relationships than men. Why? Because men see red flags and they bolt. Women see red flags and we go, I can fix that.
Have an awesome weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American. Thank you.
that's it?